On Alexa, I'm Tom Davis.
Good morning, and welcome to the Green Country Gardener Program on K1 AM 1400 FM 93.3. Our phone lines are open if you have questions or comments for our expert Larry Glass at 1-800-749-5935. Our Green Country Gardener Program is brought to you by Green Thumb Nurseries, United Rentals, Kelly Banks Tree Service, Peters True Value Hardware. Sharpen your shovels and let's get outside.
Well, I don't care how sharp your shovel is, you're still going to need your umbrella today. Hi, welcome to the Green Country Gardener Program. I'm Tom Davis, along with Larry Glass. How you doing, Larry?
Fine. I'll be under an umbrella more today than a shovel, I imagine.
Yeah, I imagine so, too.
My goodness, golly.
Waterworks came on.
Yeah, thank you very much, you guys. And it looks like, look at that weather forecast. What is this? Is April? What?
yeah, pretty much. We've got a threat of rain all the...
Teaser and likely.
All the way through Wednesday night.
I think I'll book a flight.
I just got back from vacation.
Florida, maybe. I don't know.
It's raining where I came from, too. Really bad.
Anyway, this is a welcome relief from the weather we've been having.
How hot did it get while I was enjoying the 70s and low 80s?
You don't want to know.
I got an idea. I came back, and I didn't have to mow the grass, and I kind of knew.
We went to Chicago one time. A few years back, July 4th weekend, had a convention we were going to. 55 degrees. We didn't come prepared for that, and it was windy. We were cold. We were huddled in the corners between those buildings. You think our weather over here, it goes up and down. It really went up and down over there.
Like a yo-yo.
Yeah. Anyway, over here it's either hot or it's warm in the summertime, but never cold like that. And then when I was a kid, we went on a summer vacation up to Pelican Lake, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the 30s.
You know, we were never so happy to get back to Oklahoma.
Anyway, some of the people's plants are having a few issues.
Oh, yeah, they're getting a little stressed out.
Yeah. And those issues come out, typically it's from the roots, because it can get hot, it can get cold here. Mm-hmm. The plants can deal with the atmospheric conditions here rather well, no problem. But what happens is underground a lot of times.
Ooh.
And a lot of times the leaves curling up around the edges and turning a little brown and crispy here and there is typically a sign of stress on the root system caused by a really long, rainy, wet spell.
Ooh.
And which causes sometimes a loss of the root system. And then it gets really, really hot and dry. And the root system is not developed enough to take up enough water to compensate for the heat. And the plant starts losing leaves, yellow leaves. Can fall off. And also, when we have a lot of humidity associated with the heat, we get some anthracnose, which is a leaf disease. It causes a bit of a cupping of the leaves and curly crisping around the edges. So I haven't seen a lot of that, but in the past, so traditionally we do have some issues with anthracnose during a wet period in the spring. So it's just normal. It won't hurt your plant, so don't worry about that.
Comes and goes.
Yeah,
like a cold.
And we get leaf spots and all, and sometimes members of the Prunus family that can be Entomosporium. Prunus family, that would be anything from Fotenias to laurels, the cherry laurel, the skip laurel, and autolucans, etc. They get is manifested by in the form of shot hole in some of your Prunus species, which are little holes in the leaves. Looks like a bug's been eating it, but it's a fungus disease. Causes the collapse of the tissues and just looks like the Swiss cheese, whatever.
You don't want that.
So that's a little bit of a problem with some of your Prunus species, and some other species like that might have a little issue with leaf distortions and leaf spots and whatnot. And that goes into, say, the purple leaf plum, which is very well disguised because the leaves are dark purple. You really don't see it, but they have a real bad problem with Entomosporium and a black spot, et cetera, et cetera, when it's humid and hot like that. So I guess that's an advantage of the plant, is you don't notice it until all the leaves fall off.
Wow, didn't see that coming.
I didn't see anything wrong with that. Another thing that's coming on is tomatoes are starting to exhibit some mite issues also. And you can control that with some neem oil. Works very well to control spider mites. Mm-hmm. You have to be persistent, though. One shot is not going to do you. You need to
regular.
Kind of regular basis, yeah. So keep it kind of mixed up and then spray it on there. Boxwoods are showing signs of mites, too, right now in the heat, which is to be expected. It happens every year. And we don't have Dicystan anymore, which is an excellent job of controlling mites. But we can't get that anymore. So it's a systemic insecticide. One of those, set it and
forget it.
Not anymore. Mm. Okay. Probably the best thing for mites at this point is the neem oil and repetitive applications. Pyrethrins work well also, but they're not a systemic insecticide. Mm-hmm. You say, well, why do you say insecticide when mites are an arachnid? And the imidacloprid does not work on members of the arachnid species, of which mites are a member. So the imidacloprid is good for insect problems, but not necessarily for mites, because they have a different nervous physiology than insects do, so it doesn't affect them.
They just say, what's that smell? Well, move on.
I don't remember. Munch away.
Something new at the salad bar. Wallet.
Another thing people are bringing in are bagworms.
Finally,
they're late this year. The bagworms are late.
Not again.
There's no excuse for lateness like that.
No.
But the bagworms, they don't care. They just come whenever
they
bagworms. Whenever they're tardy bagworms. Yeah. Anyway, so you need, at this point in time, you need to look very closely at your juniper species and Japanese maples. Mm-hmm. They tend to get them pretty bad too. Arborvitaes, the sappy kind of plants like that. You need to look at them real closely. And the bagworms are small enough now to where they can be controlled with spinosad. Or you can also use BT, Bacillus thuringiensis. It's a good effective control against bagworms. So you could just systematically just to put on some BT on your juniper and fusia species, et cetera, arborvitae rather. Mm-hmm. And then that will pretty much
take care of the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, if you had just one or two of them, that's not bad.
No.
No big deal. But if you have an infestation, then you've got problems. So you're
starting to look like an international camp out of bagworms. You got problems.
Yep. But anyway, they can attack almost anything. They just, I've seen them on people's eaves of their house. They crawl up these plants and eat them on the way up, and then they migrate over to the house and they crawl around on the house, and then they get these bagworms hanging off the house.
Hit the hammock for a nap.
You see, they'll be on the campers. They'll be on
all over
your
the
airstream with little bagworms hanging.
I've seen that.
But anyway, so right now is a good time to be aware of it, and actually you can kind of follow your nose. They do emit kind of a pungent smell.
Mm-hmm.
And golly, when I walk up to people's houses, I can smell that, and I say, you've got bagworms. How do you know? Smell.
This
sour juniper smell. So
yeah,
so it'd be a good time. It's relatively cool right now. You go out and check and see what's going on with the bagworms.
Between
it's going to be difficult
storms.
To spray them at this point because of the rain. So you could use a little late also for the imidacloprid, because it takes a little while for it to get up to the top. However, in between storms, you can spray the BT on it, and that'll pretty well keep them under control.
It will?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They eat that stuff, and it paralyzes their digestive tract,
right.
And then they then turn into bird food. Anyway, at the nursery, container and bald and burlap trees can be planted anytime. Just don't move them. We got some new trees coming in this week, some good old 30-gallon Chinese pistache, and they're on the horizon. So, and we do have a good selection of trees right now, too. Hostas are showing good leaves, and they're blooming right now. The encore azaleas are popping on a few flowers here and there, and some are showing some bud swell and so on. The encore azaleas are the ones that rebloom. And you get a sprinkling of flowers when the weather changes in the summer. And right now what we have is a change in the weather. So that's going to spur on some blooms on your Concord azaleas. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the spring blooming azaleas, we are at the very last point in which they can be pruned back. So if you want to prune back your azaleas, they're getting a little bit too big, get after it, because they're running out of time. They set their blooms about this time of year. Mm-hmm. Typically June, July, and August, this time frame, after the solstice, when the days begin to shorten, that's a signal for them to produce flowers. And we're experiencing that right now. Days are getting a little shorter, if you'll notice.
By a micron here in the last couple of days, yes.
It's not happening yet. It takes a while.
Couple of seconds, my friend. That's about it.
But nonetheless, it will happen pretty soon. So if you want to prune back your azaleas and your dogwood trees, get after that so you can have some flowers next spring. The dogwoods have really grown for the year, so it's almost too late to cut them back. So. But if you have to, it's not too late. You're going to miss some blooms, but they'll do okay. It won't hurt them any. Okay?
Just be careful. Be careful, my friend.
Other things happening now. The coneflowers are starting to open up and show some color.
Yes.
I go to people's houses and see them opening up. You see them on the roadsides, too. They're opening up, too. They're very visible now at this point. And they're available in all kinds of colors and everything else. And butterflies like them, too. So it's a welcome addition to the butterfly garden. You can get those and some perennial antennas and some salvias and things. And really have a really attractive area for the butterflies.
Good show for them.
You bet. So we're right now in the process of raising butterflies at the nursery. And we have all kinds of butterfly weed, too. Mm-hmm. So Asclepias is the genus for that. So we have plenty of that on hand right now. So integrate those. They're not the most attractive plants, but the larvae feed on them. It's not
good
necessarily the flowers. It's the butterfly larvae that feed on those. And the monarch butterflies specifically will go on those real well. And so if you see a worm crawling on your butterfly weed, then
you're good.
More than likely it's a monarch. Now the monarch butterfly larvae have lateral stripes on them in colors of black and green and yellow horizontal stripes, kind of like wearing a polo shirt, you know, if you will. and that's how you identify the monarch butterflies from the other larval form. So you want to preserve those as much as possible. And one plant is not really going to attract them. You really need like a group of them, a pretty good sized group to really attract them. Because when they fly around, it's just luck of the draw when they land on your butterfly weed. So you need to make it very attractive for them. So have some room in your beds for some butterfly weeds, and you should have some nice butterflies too.
Cool. How are we doing with the old hardy hibiscus?
The hardy hibiscus are doing quite well. They're growing. They're getting ready to bloom at this point. Mm-hmm. Ours are exhibiting some bud production, and they're very easy to grow, very drought tolerant, just a kind of a do-nothing kind of plant. They just kind of grow up on their own. They're a native species to lowland swampy areas.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And through selective breeding, we've been able to get them to be a pretty big blooms on them. So they're really quite attractive, very, very easy to grow, and very, very tolerant of differing environments as far as...
like last week to this week?
Last week to this week, or before last week even.
Oh, yeah.
They really just... Whoosh, all that rain.
Hello.
They just grew. And now they're getting into the season they really like, which is the warm season. Mm-hmm. And you'll have these, blooms big enough to make a hat, you know. So
That's a bloom for you.
I've used some of these in some landscape compositions where the knockout roses have failed. I've planted these, and the customers really like the blooms, and they bloom. The varieties we carry bloom for an extended period of time. They don't just bloom and go and quit. They've developed them through selective breeding to where they can bloom pretty much to the time when they start all the way till frost.
Wow, that's good.
So you might want to consider getting some of those, and we've got a good supply of them right now.
Very good. We're going to take a little bit of a break here, folks, and we'll be back with more of the Green Country Gardener program after this two-minute time out.
Hello, this is Tim from United Rentals. If you call United Rentals Strategic Sales Team, you may not get someone directly with Bartlesville, but you'll get someone from the Tulsa Metro. These are still local people. They will be from the Tulsa Hub. They all know the availability of equipment that can be brought to that branch to take care of your needs. We are local and customer focused. You can give us a call at United Rentals, 918-333-9580.
Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses is your plant headquarters, and arriving new shipments of annuals, perennials, shrubs, and trees. While you're shopping for outside the home, make it a tropical paradise inside with tropical plants from Green Thumb. Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nowata Road, home to Bartlesville's largest plant selection. And remember, Wednesdays are discount days with 10% off regular priced items. Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses, open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, Sunday, noon to 5.
Who do I call to get my trees trimmed?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
Who can grind up these stumps in my yard?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
There's a dead tree right by my house and I'm nervous it might fall.
Well, you better call Kelly Banks Tree Service.
What's that number?
It's 918-335-7000. It's 918-335-7000.
Call them today for your tree trimming, stump grinding, and tree removal needs.
That's 918-335-7000. 918-335-7000.
If you've been waiting for the right time to get a new SUV, it's here at Roman Chevrolet Buick, your Silverado City. Check out the 2021 new Buick Encore Preferred with front-wheel drive and a sell price of $18,434. You save over $9,000. Or consider the 2021 Chevy Equinox with a price of $27,812 and save almost $4,000. Enjoy the smooth, comfortable ride of the four-door 2021 Buick Envision, also with nearly $4,000 in savings. The time is right. Head to Roman Chevrolet Buick on West Main in Independence.
Ooh, crazy is what they think about me. Ain't gonna stop cause they tell me so. Cause 99 miles per hour, baby, is how.
Ah, yes, welcome, welcome, welcome back. It is time, of course, to hear for the Green Country Gardener Program, and your calls are welcome here at 1-800-749-5936. Oh, gee, Larry, we were talking about hardy hibiscus.
Hardy hibiscus, right. And still time to plant some annuals. We have a good selection of annuals around still. So, and some pintas. The butterflies like pintas, too.
Mm-hmm.
So some other ones.
There's a commonly used product called Roundup.
Roundup.
And I've used it before. But how does it work? I mean, what's the science behind Roundup?
Roundup is the brand name of a systemic broad-spectrum herbicide produced by Monsanto.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most used herbicide in the and the top-selling agrochemical.
Uh-huh.
And Monsanto developed and patented the glyphosate molecule in the 1970s. You remember that?
Yeah.
And marketed Roundup from 1973. The patent ran out in 2000. Anyway, the active ingredient in Roundup is the isopropylamine salt of glyphosate. And glyphosate's mode of action is to inhibit an enzyme involved in the synthesis of the amino acid tyrosine, triclosan, and phenylalanine. It is absorbed through foliage and translocated to growing points. Because of this mode of action, it is only effective on actively growing plants. It is not effective as a pre-emergent herbicide on that one. So, Roundup, it's got some bad press lately.
Yeah, a little.
Probably because, like everything else, and that's the EPA's taking a lot of stuff off the market, mm-hmm. people tend to abuse it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't completely understand how it works. Now, Roundup works through foliar absorption. Any degree of Roundup that hits the ground is useless. Do I have a caller?
Yeah.
Okay, put them on.
Okay, well. Let's go to it. Hi, you're on the air. Welcome aboard. You're on the Green Country Gardener Program.
Oh, hi. Here, I've got a couple of questions.
Yeah.
First one, my potatoes, they're still pretty green, but you can tell they're starting to, you know, it's kind of die back.
Right.
So I dug one hill yesterday.
Yeah.
And several of those potatoes, looked like something that already been kept all winter and starting to grow in the spring. They're actually starting to grow again.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever had them do that. And I'm wondering if I should go ahead and dig them things now or what I should do with. What's the best thing to do with potatoes like that?
Yeah, typically the potatoes are harvested when they bloom. And I don't have any potatoes in my garden this year. I don't know if they bloomed yet this year. But they sort of go to sleep again after that. So, yeah, I'd go ahead and dig them up. If they're any good, go ahead and dig them up.
I've never dug them with the vines that green. I usually wait until they die back.
Yeah, typically, yeah.
But with them growing like that, I kind of got a feeling that I better get them out of the ground.
Yeah, I don't know. I would. I'd take some of them out of the ground and maybe leave some of them in the ground. But it's kind of a tough call on potatoes because our soil here tends to be a little heavy. And our climate is very inconsistent. So the potatoes can be a tough one to grow here.
Another thing I want to know is that I've got an old refrigerator out in the garage, and I store stuff in that sometimes, and I'm wondering if I would put these better potatoes in there if I could keep them, a longer length of time. Because I think probably every gardener has problems with potatoes starting to rot after a little bit of time.
Yeah.
But is cool storage, would that keep them from rotting?
Yeah, a cool storage should keep them pretty well, but they will tend to desiccate in the refrigerator. So it only lasts so long.
I'd like to keep them bakery longer than just a few weeks or whatever length of time it is before they start to rot.
Yeah.
All right, now here on my onions. I've grew the best onions I've ever grown. I mean, I've got an onion crop.
Good.
And they are, most of them are kind of laying over, and, they're starting the dying process.
Right.
But there again, I have always waited until they die and then I'll tie them together and hang them. But will these onions, if I go ahead, if my concern right now is all this hot sun may cook those things. And I want to get them, save them if I can.
Right. Yeah, sometimes they'll.
I'm wondering if they're not dead enough yet for me to go ahead and dig.
I would dig up my onions anytime, even when they're young or old or whatever. They're just fine. So
all right.
You don't necessarily have
great.
To. Yeah, you can leave them in the ground for quite some time because they're still alive. The only problem might be pests, infiltrating into them and so on. So.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for calling.
All righty.
Onions and taters, root crops.
I love them.
Oh, yeah. I had onions with my eggs this morning.
There you go.
They're good. I like to saute them in my iron skillet. Saute them in that olive oil and then
I was a bit of a bad boy on my vacation.
Oh,
I'm not supposed to be eating too many things off my diet.
Yeah.
But I had myself a monster cheeseburger.
Oh, no.
Didn't eat the bun because that's got all that sugar.
You know how long it's been since I've had a cheeseburger?
Probably way too long. But I had a slice of onion that was so thick. I was fragrant for hours. That's how good that onion was.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to come back in a little bit. We're going to have this 2-minute timeout.
It's June and time to celebrate Dad. Peters True Value has their Father's Day sale going on. For the guy who loves to do house painting projects, treat Dad to a free 3-pack Best Brush Painting Set when you buy any gallon of Easy Care Ultra Premium Paint, Easy Care Platinum Paint, or Easy Care Woodsman Exterior Stain. A $16.49 value. Limit one free 3-pack per household, but only at Peters True Value in Dewey.
Radiology exams often cause many people fear and anxiety. Trusted, easy-to-understand information about CT, MRI, and X-ray exams can help ease that anxiety. visit radiologyinfo.org. You'll find reliable, up-to-date information on more than 235 radiology procedure, exam, and disease descriptions. Radiologyinfo.org offers patient safety information, medical images, and screening and wellness information. You'll also find videos featuring radiologists describing what to expect and how to prepare. The site is totally free, doesn't require registration, and is available in English and Spanish. Best of all, radiologyinfo.org is continually reviewed by medical experts to ensure that it is accurate and up to date. Get the information you need by visiting radiologyinfo.org, produced by the Radiological Society of North America and the American College of Radiology.
Hi, I'm Todd Starnes, host of The Todd Starnes Show. I hope you join me weekdays at 1 o'clock right here on K1, the one you trust, at AM 1400 and FM 93.3. Tune in for an honest conversation and, of course, my commentaries on the events of the world around us. Fresh, honest, and unafraid, it's The Todd Starnes Show with me, Todd Starnes. Weekdays at 1 on K1, the one you trust.
All right, and welcome back. It is the Green Country Gardener Program. I'm Tom Davis. He's Larry Glass. He's the experts. I just kind of answer the phone and, you know, smart off a little bit. It is 8:34. Our phone line is open at 1-800-749-5936. Where are we here, young man?
We were talking about Roundup.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And the proper use of it.
Yes.
And it, I like to use it on a very still day.
Which is really highly advisable. You don't
right.
want that coming back on you.
If there's a little bit of grass you want to spray some Roundup on, and it's a windy day, you'll have this little streak going down.
All over the place.
Opposite the direction of the wind. I saw that yesterday on a customer's face.
Like, game incredible.
Don't do that in the wind, guy. Come on. No. But use a kind of a fine mist, and pick a time of day, in either in the evening or the morning when it's still.
Yeah.
And then let it absorb into the plant. A use of a surfactant helps a lot also.
It does.
Now, typically, the really good formulations of glyphosate will have a surfactant built into it, and they'll stick to the plant. So, anyway, so Roundup.
Hit the leaves.
Now, because soil-bound Roundup is basically ineffective. Uh-huh. Now, there's a, down in Texas, there was a rose company who used some Roundup to control the weeds in their roses.
Uh-huh.
And they had issues with soil-borne glyphosate. And it's probably because they used too much.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a lot of this stuff. It works, if you understand how it works physiologically, it doesn't take that much of it for it to work. And people overapply it. So anyway, Monsanto has also produced seeds which grow into plants genetically engineered to be tolerant of glyphosate, which are known as Roundup Ready crops.
Gotcha.
They don't have Roundup in them, but they're tolerated. Mm-hmm. However, the overuse of Roundup in these plants can cause the absorption of glyphosate into the plant, and it can be carried on to the food also.
That's not good.
So, go ahead and use it, but use it judiciously, use it properly. It's just like a lot of things, like MSMA, monosodium acid methanarsenate. That's what MSMA
yeah,
is.
That one, yeah.
And it can cause issues with groundwater pollution and all that, too, from the overuse of that. It's just kind of like Roundup, but it's selective in that it will control crabgrass and your Bermuda grass.
Mm.
But you just don't want to overapply it because it doesn't take a lot for it to work.
And you have to be a little patient.
Right. Now, we have a replacement for MSMA. It's called Quinclorac. It works physiologically works the same as MSMA,
mm-hmm.
but it's a different chemical. It doesn't have arsenic in it. And you can use it on your crabgrass.
Hey.
And it'll control. I don't have any crabgrass in my yard this year.
Nor do I. It started out when we had all the wet stuff, you know,
yeah.
And it dried out for a little bit, and I'm thinking, ooh, here it comes. Well, we got rid of it.
Uh-huh.
Pulled it out by the roots of what I did.
I used a pre-emergent this year. It worked very well to control it.
A lot of people did.
I still had a few weeds in the yard. They didn't upset me, though. The dandelions were kind of pretty, actually.
Tastes good, too.
But I used a Q on the dandelions, and I got rid of them. But, yeah, so. But in a Quinclorac, so.
Yes.
So there's a lot of good stuff out there, a lot of new stuff out there, so. Anyway, so just like any other insecticide or herbicide, just use it properly and use it judiciously, and it really won't possess a problem. Now, there are some ornamentals that aren't affected by the Roundup.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And typically, those are the ones that have a very waxy leaf on them, such as English ivy or the Euonymus radicans coloratus or a winter creeper, purple leaf winter creeper, has some degree of immunity to the Roundup because of the waxy leaf. It doesn't absorb into the leaf.
Mm-hmm.
So it's ineffective in some plants like that. So, but it's used primarily for a lot of broadleaf weeds and grassy weeds in desirable crops and so on. Now, there's also a grass killer, selectively kills grass. It works chemically, it works similar to Roundup, although it only affects a chemical process resident in grass species. It stops the production of certain proteins in there, and eventually the plant dies out because it just kind of starves, if you will. So a grass killer works that way. And the grass killer is relatively expensive, because it's difficult to synthesize. And also, it comes without a surfactant built into it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to add a surfactant when you use a selective grass killer like that, merely because it's unstable for a long period of time if you have a surfactant in it. So be prepared to put a little soap in it or get a wetting agent along with a grass killer, per se,
mm-hmm.
For it to be effective. Grasses have little tiny hairs on them, you know, and the water droplets tend to bounce off of that. And mm-hmm. surfactant gives it a positive charge, so it sticks to the negative charged little hairs on your grass. It just sticks to it and stays on the leaf. So as with Roundup, a grass killer only works through foliar absorption. So the grass killer is a little bottle, about half the size of this, for about $50.
That would be a pop bottle, folks.
Yeah, it's expensive. But it goes a long way. It doesn't take much of it to work. And anything, like I said, anything that hits the ground on the Roundup and in the selective grass killer is a waste of money. So you be very careful when you apply it. And pick a still time of the day when you do it, too.
Very good.
Typically, these herbicides are rain fast within just a few hours because the plant absorbs it through the leaves within a few hours. So I wouldn't do it today.
No.
because it's going to, or all week actually, just have to put up with the weeds for another week.
Yeah, wait till about Thursday next week. And when we come back, we're going to have the tree of the week.
Hang tight,
folks. We've got more of the Green Country Gardener program coming up after this 2-minute timeout.
Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses is your plant headquarters. And arriving new shipments of annuals, perennials, shrubs, and trees. While you're shopping for outside the home, make it a tropical paradise inside with tropical plants from Green Thumb. Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nowata Road, home to Bartlesville's largest plant selection. And remember, Wednesdays are discount days with 10% off regular priced items. Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses, open Monday through Saturday 9 to 5, Sunday noon to 5.
Food is the subject on the Dining Guides between 11 and noon Monday through Friday on sister stations 100.1 KYFM and 104.9 FM KRIG. Learn about Wheezy's Cafe, Szechuan Chinese Restaurant, Speedy Drinks, and KFC, all in Bartlesville, CV's in Dewey, and Copan Restaurant and Truck Stop. The Dining Guides on 100.1 KYFM and 104.9 KRIG.
Who do I call to get my trees trimmed?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
Who can grind up these stumps in my yard?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
There's a dead tree right by my house and I'm nervous it might fall.
Well, you better call Kelly Banks Tree Service.
What's that number?
It's 918-335-7000. It's 918-335-7000.
Call them today for your tree trimming, stump grinding, and tree removal needs.
That's 918-335-7000. 918-335-7000.
The Maple Street Meat Market in Coffeyville sells everything from the to the tutor.
From the rooter 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 to the tutor. No matter how you say it, one thing still remains. They have the best steaks in the tri-state area, voted on by their loyal customers. And if you aren't one, maybe you should be. Find them fast in names and numbers. That's the Maple Street Meat Market in Coffeyville.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Green Country Gardener Program. Our phone line is open for a change at 1-800-749-5936. Larry Glass, Tree of the Week. Where are we here?
Blue spruce. The blue spruce is actually somewhat drought tolerant, and it's somewhat tolerant also of our alkaline soils.
Hey.
It's good for Oklahoma, right. Ha. But anyway, it will tolerate clay if it's well drained. But it doesn't tolerate poor drainage. It has a narrow upright growth, 80 to 100 feet tall and 20 to 30 feet wide. Probably over here, you might get maybe 50 feet max out of it, and probably 20 feet wide maybe at the moment.
That's still a big tree, you know?
Give it lots of room, though. I see a lot of people who plant them right by the front door, you know. Yeah.
Not a good move.
But after a while, you can't get in the house. I mean, how are you going to get the piano out if there's a big spruce in the way? Yeah, really. It cannot grow in an anticipated area, albeit very slowly. It kind of creeps up on you. You know, 20 years from now, you have the, where's my front door? You know what?
Hey.
This big blue thing out there.
I thought that was a shrub.
No, it's a big old tree. Yeah. Anyway, you want to water this one fairly deeply and infrequently. And allow for a drying period between watering. They are not, physiologically, they are not adapted to wetland areas. They are, if you look where their native habitat, I went on a cable car ride up Sandia Mountain, and where that is.
Over there.
Albuquerque.
Yeah, over there.
And I was observing the different plants as you went up in elevation, and went to an area with a lot of spruce. And they were just living right out of these rocks. I mean, they can live in the some of the most adverse conditions. But you put them here in the clay and in this periodic wetness, they are not genetically tolerant to those conditions.
They ain't happy here.
They're not a mulberry tree. They're not an elm or a hackberry, for that matter. You know, so they do have some drainage requirements because their systems are just not set up for that. Mm. So anyway, it's definitely not a swamp plant. And we prefer to plant this one slightly above the surrounding soil area, a little bit of a mounding, if you will, on the spruce tree. One problem they're having, and I've seen it on some people's plants, they probably haven't noticed it yet, the spider mites are real bad on spruce. Now, one is the dwarf Alberta spruce. Mm-hmm. It's this little green cone thing that people really like. Mm-hmm. And golly, they spend hundreds of dollars on these spiral ones, but they don't do anything to control the mites. The spider mites are terrible on these things, and it's starting to happen on some people's plants. Mm. So look real closely at your spruce tree. Look for a little tiny. You get the piece of paper and do the paper test on it, and you want to do that to see if you have mites, and you do have to do some control of the mites. Now the neem oil works very well. The Captain Jack's dead bug works real well on mites too. So anyway, they also get bagworms. I've seen spruce trees just overnight decimated by bagworms.
Ooh, not fun.
Well, it was fine yesterday. You know, there's nothing.
That smells kind of funny.
Now you have a hat rack, you know. Where,
oh, my.
Whereas before you had a really nice spruce tree. Yeah, it just happens overnight. So you really have to be conscious and aware of these plants. They're kind of expensive, too. It takes a lot to generate these globe spruce, actually. Mm-hmm. You have a rootstock. Then a stem stock, then a reverse stock, then a top stock. All these grafts necessary to make a globe spruce. And they're expensive because of that. And it takes a while to grow them on, too, because they grow so slowly. Then by the time they get to the nursery, they're like $300. And then you plant it in your yard, and 3 months later, it's eaten up by spider mites.
Hey!
So
that's not good.
You have to be really aware of these plants. And they don't demand much of your time. You just casually walk by them and you just look at them closely occasionally to check on their condition. And if you have a problem, come by the nursery and say, hey, this is, bring your phone too, you know, pictures of it. I got this problem with my spruce. What do I do? and we can help out.
There you go.
But typically what bothers them the most is too heavy a soil, poor drainage, or spider mites or bagworms. The only thing that really bothers the spruce trees here.
Mm. Other than that, they're just fine. What's our shrub of the week?
Shrub of the week is the yellow leaf spirea.
Ah.
The Spirea ex bumalda.
Wow.
The yellow leaf spirea is an attractive has attractive bronzy new growth in the spring and matures to a soft yellow green, backed by some blooms in the summertime. Mm-hmm. The fall foliage is a coppery orange color.
Kind of cool.
Great in the foreground. I like to use it for just a spot of color.
Mm-hmm.
In the landscape changes from season to season, mm-hmm. except in the winter when there isn't any. So, but it's easy to grow, and this one requires some discipline. In the spring, you have to cut it back rather sternly for it to maintain itself real. Otherwise, it gets kind of gangly and wild and ugly.
Mm.
So, the yellow leaf spirea is a very popular plant because it is resistant mm-hmm. to a lot of diseases and insects and whatnot. But it does have a tendency to look a little gangly over time.
Ugh.
So, just a cut back. Typically, I like to cut these back on Valentine's Day.
The Valentine's Day Massacre.
That's right. When you see this big old cloud of black smoke over at Kevin Putter's house, it's time to cut back your spirea.
16 cylinders.
16 cylinder, diesel powered, turbocharged, dual exhaust, hedge clipper. But anyway, so that's kind of the shrub of the week. There is a new one, a parallel to that, called the Golden Ligustrum.
Uh-huh.
I really like this one because it has no blooms, it's semi evergreen. And there's some planted along the country club, along Silver Lake Road. It mm-hmm. looked like forsythias in bloom. Very, very bright yellow color. We have a caller?
Yes, we do. Hi, good morning. You're on the air with Larry. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I had a Japanese red maple last year that when the seeds dropped, I had a bunch that grew in the backyard.
Uh-huh.
And I let a bunch of them just go.
Right.
And surprisingly, there's some of them that are still surviving. And I was wondering, can you give me any tips on transplanting them, the best time of the year and preparation if I do transplant them?
Okay. Yeah, the best time of the year to transplant those typically is when there are no leaves on them. In other words, when they're dormant. And right now, if you have some that are pretty good sized, this time of year, I don't know how big they are, but how large are some of these spots?
There's one of them it's probably about 12 inches.
Okay, that's not too large of a plant. So I wouldn't be overly concerned at this point to do any root pruning of them. Typically, when you're growing trees in a tree farm, every year they go in, they prune the roots. So they have a close in to the main trunk, so it'll survive a transplanting a lot better. So one that's just a foot tall really doesn't have much of a problem. But you do want to wait until if they're dormant, typically after a real hard freeze, to transplant them.
All right. Very good. And right. Also on the original tree, for some reason, there was I guess it's one of the squirrels that are starting to gnaw on the bark. Is there anything I can use to prevent that?
That's a behavioral thing, and it's tough to do it, to control that. I'm trying to think. I think we might have something at the nursery. It's something that's bitter, or help me out on this. Something that's bitter when you bite into it.
When the squirrel bites into it.
Yeah. That's a behavior that has to be modified. There's ways to do that. You could use some tree wrap on it,
mm-hmm.
and they'll probably go to greener pasture somewhere. But once one bites into that and they taste that sap in there, they tell their buddies too, and next thing you know, you got a hat rack.
Yikes. All right.
So,
I'll stop by and see what you have. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling.
All right. We're going to have to take this break here, and we'll be back after this 2-minute, 20-second timeout.
Back in the early 1930s, Frank and Jane Phillips hosted a wonderful party at their lodge home at Willow Rock. For this special party, Frank hired the world-famous magician Harry Blackstone to provide the entertainment for the large crowd. Throughout the evening, Blackstone amazed the guests with his card tricks and sleight of hand, with the crowd applauding and laughing as the tricks got better and better. Finally, Blackstone asked Jane Phillips to step forward. He reached into his coat and removed a new deck of cards and dramatically unwrapped them, removed the cards from the deck, and shuffled them several times. He then asked Mrs. Phillips to cut the cards, which she did, pulling the Queen of Spades, which she showed to the crowd. She put the card back into the deck, and Blackstone carefully shuffled the cards two or three times, then suddenly spun around and threw the entire deck of cards into the wall of the lodge, just to the left of the front door. 51 cards fell to the floor, and the Queen of Spades stuck on the wall, where it still remains today. A perfect example of the magic of Willow Rock. Come see it for yourself, and welcome home to Willow Rock.
Join us weekday mornings for One-on-One with a Professional on K1 AM 1400 and FM 93.3. Tune in at 9:30 on the first and third Mondays when Bartlesville Health and Rehab will be in. On the second and fourth Mondays, listen in to hear important information about city government when representatives from the city will be in for City Matters. Tuesday at 9:30, tune in with Dr. Carrie Williams from Med Club Bartlesville for Health Talk. The first Wednesday of the month at 9:30, Green Country Village Senior Living Community will be in to talk about senior living. Join OKM Music on the first Wednesday of the month at 9:45 for information about Bartlesville Entertainment. On the second Wednesday, Regent Bank will be in at 9:30 with financial information. Go one-on-one with Dewey City Manager Kevin Treese at 9:45 on the second Wednesday. Join K1 Car Talk with Dungey's Family of Autos every Thursday morning at 9:45. On Fridays at 9:45, it's Brew and Buzz with Thad Dilbeck. Keep informed with One-on-One with a Professional exclusively on K1.
Not sure about the weather today? Ask Alexa. Alexa, open K1 Bartlesville.
That's where everyone goes for local news, weather, and traffic.
Yow! It is 8:54.
I thought of something on that squirrel business.
Yeah, what about that squirrel business?
You might put perhaps a tray of birdseed close by.
Okay.
And they'll find that more attractive than the
A lot less work.
Yeah. A lot less work, yeah.
For them.
For them. And gives the dog something to yell at, too.
Have you ever noticed that squirrels kind of have this little ornery behavior? You can almost see them smile and laugh every time they torment a dog.
Oh, I know.
They love it.
We like to put the birdseed on the patio. Mm-hmm. And we got these windows that, and we watch the birds and all that. Mm-hmm. And now and then a squirrel, and the dog gets so angry.
Oh, yeah.
He just, grrr, yeah, rah, 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 rah. We let him out, and he runs, and the squirrels run away, and they up and bark.
They just laugh right back at him.
They laugh right back at him. Yeah, and the dog comes back in, I'm a hero, yes. And then they're right back out there.
By the end of the day, that dog is tired.
But anyway, so if you have something that, perhaps they find more attractive than your tree, perhaps just a plate of bird seed. And that probably will modify their behavior. And then they'll forget about the tree, and then you can stop with the bird seed maybe, and then they'll go somewhere else. But anyway, the birds like it too. So
they do.
So anyway, we were talking about the golden ligustrum.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one I like to use for color accents in the landscape because it does give some bright yellow color. And the more sun this one has, the brighter the color. If in the shade, it'll be kind of this lemon-lime kind of yellow color.
Uh-huh.
But in the bright sun, in the hot western sun, it'll have this real bright yellow color. Ooh. And it's reminiscent of forsythias when they bloom in the spring. Except they don't, those don't bloom, those are leaves.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how that works. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they're very attractive all summer long. So use them as a color accent in the landscape, only in areas that's really sunny. Mm-hmm. In the shade, they tend to just grow out, stretch out really without exhibiting a lot of color. So they have their requirements. The advantage of the spirea is it will tolerate a little bit of shade and still have the yellow color, but it'll be kind of a greenish color as well. So anyway, that's the shrub of the week was the yellow leaf spirea and the golden ligustrum, a parallel for that, and that leads us into salvia. Salvia is a very popular one because it takes the heat real well, gives you some color, and attracts the hummingbirds and butterflies and things. So they do like the warm, well-drained soil. Do really quite well. So you might consider introducing some salvia into your landscape. It does like good drainage. It likes a whole lot of light and average to slightly dry moisture. When you plant this and you don't want to irrigate, you might want to consider mulching it too.
Okay.
Just so it can have a more steady supply of sufficient moisture to keep it going. But typically, these are about very drought tolerant. And the salvias are characterized by a square stem. Yeah, they have a 4x4 for stem. Yes.
Yeah.
So you ought to breed that with pine trees, so the wood's already square. You know. But anyway, and salvia incorporates a whole lot of different plants. It's just the mint family carries this characteristic of the square stem, and they're very tolerant of our growing conditions here. So anyway, that's our tree, our annual and perennial of the week, if you will. They're very prolific and durable bloomers. They're really not bothered too much by pests, and they're not a some of them species are not as attractive to hummingbirds and butterflies as some of the species. So if you want to attract the hummingbirds and butterflies, you want to be sure to pick one out that will do that. So anyway, at the nursery, we have all these plants. We have the hardy hibiscus, the salvia, the golden ligustrum, some spruce trees. We have all of them there at the nursery for you to look at. And so you can put together a landscape with some color. And we do that also. We're very busy right now in our landscaping. We finished up a couple of projects this week, some retaining walls and some sod and whatnot. And
just in the nick of time.
Yeah, really, yeah. So anyway, that's done for this week. And we got a lot more on the horizon. We got a lot of things to plant. We are so busy right now.
Well, that's a good thing.
Come to us. We've got sprinklers. I got to look at a sprinkler problem today. They have a fault code on their timer. And typically that's a coil on a valve that's been shorted out either by a voltage spike or something has happened to it. And so that's pretty well easy. With an ohmmeter, you can find it pretty quick. But anyway, so we do that too, irrigation systems. And I've had some in the ground for 30 years, and they're still just plugging along, no freeze damage. And I know two of them last year, they forgot to winterize them.
Oh, no.
No problems.
Wow.
We put these insulated boxes over the backfill preventers. Mm-hmm. So if you forget to do it, no big deal. So anyway.
You're protected in case of a zinger.
That's right. We had a zinger real bad on this year. So anyway, Tom, golly, it's been quite a week, and we got quite a week ahead of us. And by all means, keep that shovel sharp. We will see you next week.
All right, Larry, thank you very much. Stay tuned, folks. News is next.
Dignity, compassion, excellence. Stump Funeral Home and Crematory, Bartlesville, Nowata, Barnstall.
This is KWON Bartlesville, K2.